Welcome to The Aging Scientist, focusing on all things science and aging. I'm Clarissa Giebel, and I'm a researcher at the University of Liverpool. This season focuses on some of the basics of dementia. Today, we're going to talk about ethnicity and dementia. What's it like facing dementia and accessing care when from a minority ethnic background? For many people, being from a minority ethnic background proves to be a barrier for care. But I'm joined today by Dr. Sadia Parveen, to share her research into this topic and share her own opinions. Sadia is a health psychologist and senior research fellow at the Center for Dementia Studies at the University of Bradford. Welcome, Sadia. Great to have you on the show today.
Thank you. Hi, Clarissa. Nice to be here.
So, Sadia, fellow dementia researcher, up north as well. Maybe let's start at the beginning a bit. What made you interested in working in this topic area, working on dementia?
In dementia. So when I was 16, my after school job was working in a care home. So the care home was opposite my high school. So after school, I would pop over, and my job, they didn't have a proper term for it. Nowadays, they would call it activities coordinator. But that was my job. And there were quite a few people living with dementia in the care home, and I didn't really know what dementia was as a 16-year-old. But the care staff would be telling me, oh, this person has dementia, so you need to do this, this and this. And that's how I became interested.
Ah, and then what did you do to go into dementia research then?
So after school, I went into, I did psychology at Bangor University, and most people will know Professor Linda Clare was based at Bangor University. So you can't escape dementia research at Bangor. Of course you're going to get interested, and I was already interested from my experience working in the care home.
Okay, so that's dementia, and I've cited Linda in my PhD a lot as well, so I know of her research. So how did you come to focus on ethnicity in particular and dementia?
I think when I started doing my PhD, well, it was actually my master's that started that sort of strand of work and that interest. Basically, in my master's project, I was interested in caregiving experiences, but it wasn't specific to dementia research. And I managed to recruit a really good sample of different minority ethnic groups. But what was interesting was that the patterns that were emerging were different for minority ethnic communities, and particularly those caring for dementia, compared to those that were caring for someone who'd had a stroke or someone who was living with cancer. They were quite different. And it's because people who were living with dementia were doing caring for a much longer period of time. And that's why I became interested in the experiences, particularly of South Asian families, caring for a person with dementia. So that's what I went on to do in my PhD. And after that, I carried on building that stream of work.
And you just mentioned South Asian populations. And I mean, when we talk about minority ethnic groups, that's a vast and heterogeneous terms really to use. It's not just one, it's so many. Each has different experiences, but also we're aware, of course, that each individual with dementia, each caregiver has their own individual different experiences. But so are there particular groups you're working with when you're looking at ethnicity and dementia?
So we have lots of different research projects going on right now. I would say the majority focus, I'm going to use the term South Asian because we do include South Asian in terms of Indian, Bangladeshi, Pakistani, Sri Lankan. So those main groups have been included in our research projects around South Asian groups. We also have PhD students focusing on different populations, so the British Irish and the African Caribbean communities as well. But I would say that the majority of my portfolio of research is around South Asian communities.
And what's been some of the key findings so far looking at people from the South Asian communities and dementia from your work?
Yeah, so I think the thing that I've been really interested in is what motivates someone to become a carer. And although it's not a decision you make, you are kind of brought up with certain cultural expectations. You grow up believing that you will care for your parents or your grandparents. And I've been really interested in how that impacts a carer's role and how they experience the actual caregiving role. Particularly within the South Asian community, we do find that they have these cultural expectations that we call familism. So they have this cultural obligation to look after family members. However, that does not necessarily mean they're actually willing to provide care. And that's what healthcare services don't seem to understand. They think that because people are obligated to provide care, they don't need services because they're going to keep it in the family. But actually, these carers are often not very willing, and that leads to poorer outcomes. So those carers tend to be more anxious, more depressed, and have a poorer quality of life as a result.
And do you notice any differences in terms of generations of the carers? So maybe younger carers are different to older carers from the South Asian background?
Yeah, definitely. The pattern's really interesting. It won't be as you expect. You would expect maybe the younger carers to be less culturally obligated because they were acculturated to the Western culture. It's actually the opposite. We get the very, like, the first generation, so they have strong values of family obligation, looking after your family. However, the second generation, because they've done that carer role and they know how difficult it is, they've experienced it, so they don't have that same expectation of their kids. I've done lots of focus groups and I always remember this one person who said to me, I really, really hope I get put into a care home. I rather have fish and chips than my son's cooking. And it really shocked me that this 50-year-old South Asian man wanted to be in a care home rather than be looked after by family members. But then you get the younger generation, people in their 20s who've never really had the care experience. So they have what I call these unrealistic expectations, where they've maybe spent time with the older generation, so they feel they should have that cultural value of looking after their family member. So they seem to be more willing at the time, but I reckon if you followed them up, they probably wouldn't be as willing once they start doing the care role.
And you talk about the caregiving, so obviously that's the unpaid and more like family-related caregiving here. What are your experiences or your work knowledge about maybe services that people from minority ethnic backgrounds or South Asian backgrounds in particular are trying to access? Is that difficult, or how does that work? Or is the care more provided within the family environment?
Care is provided more in the family environment, and that's not because people want to keep it within the family. They do want to use services and access services, but there's a massive fear of accessing services. It's so sad. People expect racism, they expect to be stereotyped, and they expect to be treated badly. So it's much easier for them to just carry on doing what they can at home than go through, dare I whether you use the word trauma, of accessing services. It is a traumatic experience for them to go to services and feel like they've just gone round and round in circles and not achieved anything. That's time and energy wasted that they could have spent with a relative.
Where do you think, I don't know if you know, but where do you think that fear of, did you say racism from the service, where does that come from?
I think it comes from experience.
Okay.
Unfortunately, people have experienced racism and people talk. So these stories spread and people become fearful.
That's horrible. So you're saying that, is that pre-dementia experiences, and that's why?
Yes. So not necessarily related to dementia, but just the experience of being from a minority ethnic group who may have a different cultural way of living, who might have different languages that they speak. Yeah.
So I suppose all the more important then that we also have a very diverse and aware care provider service, isn't it? So that everyone is represented well, so that potential service users can access the care if they need it.
Yeah, definitely. We're about to finish a study called the ADAPT study, and we did some workshops with South Asian families, people who provide what we call voluntary sector organisations, and healthcare professionals, GPs and people who work in memory services. And what was really interesting was people wanted support from different professionals at different stages. So when they're at that dementia awareness stage, they rather access a community group and get supported by them to go to the GP and get the referral to a memory service. But once they have the diagnosis, they want to be supported by a healthcare professional rather than a community worker. So that preference changes as you go through the care pathway.
Okay, interesting. And so I suppose this also encompasses the diagnosis. We've just talked about a lot about generally caregiving and how to support someone with dementia. What about actually approaching a healthcare professional in the first place if someone thinks, oh, something might not be right in my relative? What's happening then in people from South Asian backgrounds or others?
This is my opinion. I think people access community services because these community workers are usually from the same background as the family members. So they're usually minority ethnic members themselves who have the skills, and they also have the confidence. They know how to navigate the healthcare system. So families therefore prefer to use those community-based services because it gives them the confidence and an ally in a sense to approach the GP and say, look, I really do think my family member might potentially have dementia, could we be referred? So a lot of families feel that when they go by themselves, they get fobbed off or they're not listened to. So by having these community workers, care navigators, or whatever you want to call them, who are from the same background as yourself, it gives people the confidence to make that leap, really.
Yeah, having that trust, I suppose, and that rapport build, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so we've talked about the barriers really that lead to getting a diagnosis in the first place, which obviously then leads to people not getting the support that they should be entitled to and they should get. And also generally the services, you were saying, there's this fear sometimes of racism or just not getting anywhere. Even if they're trying, they're not getting anywhere. So what would you say from your own opinion and from maybe your research in how care could be adapted better? What should be done to provide better support and care for people with dementia from a minority ethnic background and for carers?
Research-wise, it was really interesting when we were doing the ADAPT study, which looks at culturally adapting a care pathway for South Asian families. And what we found was there was a lot around dementia awareness raising. There was a lot around adapting diagnostic tools to be more appropriate for South Asian families. And then there was hardly anything for post-diagnostic support. So all the interventions we found, they tended to be done in India or Pakistan or in other South Asian countries. There was hardly anything in the UK. And I think we might have found two, and those were done, those interventions were developed, evaluated, and then not delivered. So I just think as a first step, we need to be delivering stuff. Whatever it is, something has to be delivered before we can at least polish it up and make it good, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I mean, if we look at the population breakdown, there's so many people living in the UK that are from minority ethnic backgrounds. So why is the care not out there? Why aren't the interventions there?
So it is ridiculous that the South Asian group is this largest minority ethnic group after the majority white British, but unfortunately there doesn't seem to be much out there. And I think the problem is with commissioning services, that a service might be commissioned for a year, great, people use it, and then after a year the funding runs out and then there's nothing there again for people.
I suppose that's the issue a lot with research as well, and I feel sometimes apprehensive. Why would we try out an intervention? We're funded for a couple of years and then there's nothing afterwards. We need to ensure that there's this longevity and sustainability of any support.
Absolutely. And I think this might be a bit controversial and it's just my opinion. So a lot of the research we do with minority ethnic communities, it tends to be, it's hard to engage people into research. It's not appropriate to do the gold standard randomized controlled trials. So I've always said we have this problem where services are delivered for a short amount of time and then they get taken away. So instead of doing these randomized controlled trials to prove something's effective, let's test out what's acceptable and feasible and what can be implemented in the real world and focus our attention on that as researchers. Because I think that might be where we have most impact in service delivery for people, rather than producing this beautiful intervention that we know works effectively in our trial, but in the real world, it goes back into the box and nothing ever happens.
And I think that's where public and stakeholder involvement comes in a lot as well, doesn't it?
Definitely.
So do you involve the public a lot in all of your research, and how do you do that?
Oh, yes. I don't think I've ever had a single project, not even my master's, without what we call patient and public involvement. So my research, particularly, I'll use the caregiving hub example. That idea to look at willingness to care and preparedness to care didn't come from me. It came from the community itself. So they were talking to me about, we are obligated to provide care. And I just remember this one person saying to me, doesn't mean I want to care. And that really stuck in my head. So I explored that a bit more with different communities. And it really struck me that, yes, you can be obligated, but not necessarily willing. And I hadn't thought of that as a researcher. So that idea, that research question, came from the community. So in fact, all of our research at the centre is often grounded by what people, stakeholders want, rather than us going away and developing a research question.
Because as you said, if we just design a really methodologically sound trial or something, but it's so far removed in that academic bubble that it doesn't relate to the needs and feasibility in real life. What's the point? I suppose, do you feel that being from a minority ethnic background yourself, do you feel it helps you in engaging with the community groups because you can maybe relate with them? Maybe also linguistically, that can sometimes be a barrier for research?
It has its pros and cons. So particularly when you're doing qualitative research, so because I'm from the same minority ethnic group, and my PhD students have said the same, they're finding this now, people don't explain things to you because they assume you already know, because you're from that background. So they'll say things like, oh, well, you know what it's like to go to the GP, rather than say, this is what it's like to go to the GP. So that is a barrier if you're from the same background. But the pros are you have the language skills already, so you're not relying on interpreters. You have the trust and the rapport already. So that makes it easier to engage people to be involved with research.
Mm-hmm. So really two sides of the coin there, isn't it? And I also know that you're doing or have done dementia detectives, isn't it? Is it to raise awareness in schools, was it? Yeah. Or do you want to share a bit about that?
Yeah, so it was a workshop, a dementia awareness workshop that covers things like what is dementia, signs and symptoms, risk factors for dementia, and how to support someone living with dementia. And we have three different versions. We have Dementia Detectives Junior, which is for primary school level kids. We have one for secondary school, and we have a university level Dementia Detectives. As I tell you about the different versions, it sounds like Monopoly.
And has
we've been doing the workshops in different schools, and we've actually delivered them internationally as well. So they've been delivered in Malaysia, they've been delivered in Nigeria, in Pakistan. So yeah, lots of different places.
So has it helped to raise awareness and knowledge about dementia?
Yeah, so we evaluated them. So we did what we call pre and post questionnaires, looking at knowledge, attitudes, and willingness to care. And people obviously improved their knowledge, but more importantly, they developed a more positive attitude after going through the workshop. And a lot of the kids were saying that actually they would be more willing to support someone living with dementia in the future, whether that was a relative or working in a care home.
That's fantastic. And I suppose it's also highlighting that I feel sometimes in the general public, there's this doom and gloom apprehension about dementia. It's all negative, but there can be positives, like or how people are coping with it or dealing with it. It's not just all doom and gloom. And for people to understand that is important.
Yeah, definitely. And the kids don't see it as doom and gloom. They're always like, oh, there's loads you can do with someone living with dementia. Whereas if you ask adults, they're like, well, I don't know. What can they do?
Oh, no, that's great. That sounds like a great initiative, and not just nationally, but you've really generated some impact there abroad as well.
Yeah, so I've had a couple of people work with me. So Dr. Alice Griffiths, who's at Liverpool, and Dr. Nick Farina at Brighton. So between the three of us, it's involved a lot of personal energy to get this initiative out there. So yeah, people have been delivering it in different countries and nationally. So it's been great to see.
I know, Alice migrated to Liverpool, so she'll be keen to hear her name mentioned. She'll be in the next season's podcast as well. That sounds great, and it's great to get an insight about your work and what you've been doing so far in the field. So what's next on your research agenda, Sadia?
So I think I've hinted at that I'm very interested in implementation. So my next study will be looking at how to implement a carer quality of life measure in social care settings. So hoping to get that started in the next few months, but really building on the work that we've done in ADAPT, where we've highlighted a real gap in prevention, post-diagnostic support and end-of-life care for minority ethnic communities. So I think those are the types of areas that I'd be looking to develop in the future.
Very interesting. And we keep on working together anyways, which is lovely. So yeah. But no, that's fantastic. Thank you so much, Sadia. This has given me a much better understanding as well of what's going on in terms of minority ethnic backgrounds, because usually it's something that I look at as one barrier of many to accessing care. So because I also look at where people live and how much money they have, etc., all these things. So thank you very much. Been a pleasure talking to you, Sadia.
Yeah, it's been nice to have a chat about it, because we don't get to talk about our research on an informal basis very often. So it's been nice to chat through.
Absolutely. So if you want to learn more about Sadia's work, have a look at the bio with more details. And for more discussion into the basics of dementia, have a listen to my next few podcasts.